Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us on the program today, two real estate pros, Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District, will be on the line to answer your questions, whether you're buying, you're selling a home, you're looking for that perfect home, maybe you're looking for a vacant lot for your survivalist bunker, whatever. If you have a real estate question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today, Alex Monticello, Renata Lewis, and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Real Estate Today, we got two pros here with us. Well, not with us, but on the line with us, as it were. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is with us on the line. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District and also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. If you have a question about real estate, this is the time. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpopwamc.org. We don't get through every call, we don't get through every email, but we do the best we can. Alex and Renata, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray. Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you both here. Everybody healthy?
Everybody's great. Thank you.
Staying healthy, Ray. Thank you.
That's good. All right. Well, you know, I assume things now warming up outside. They're pretty warm. The rates are low. It must be... The market must be heating up.
Yes. I would say we are in a very competitive market. And I know the talk has been about, you know, sellers, top markets, getting top value for your home right now. But I think it's a really awesome time for the buyers to purchase as well because their affordability is very low. So we have a really great market both ways around.
Alex.
Yeah, I echo what Renata said. It's a super competitive market. I was just looking at some of the latest statistics from the Capital Region, and it's interesting because sales are down, you know, by around 35%. Pending sales are down 23%, but the average median sale price is up nearly 9%. And that's all because there's a real lack of inventory, and there's a lot more buyers out there right now than sellers. But as Renata pointed out, you know, interest rates are really low, so it's a very affordable time to buy.
We're doing real estate on our program today. Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis join us to take your calls. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to join in. And three or four emails here. This one came in from Tim. And Tim says, I'm an agent, and I've been slowly getting out and restarting my business. Tomorrow is my first listing appointment since the COVID shutdown. A little nervous. Doing everything in a mask is going to be a new challenge. Any advice? And that's from Tim.
Smile a lot. in all seriousness, I think, I think you treat it just like you did before, and letting people know... doing a market analysis and looking at the latest homes that have sold in the last 3 to 6 months, which is really helpful to determining the market.
All right. Renata.
Yeah, I think it's important to have a discussion about the pandemic, how you're handling showings, how you're going to handle marketing the property, what's changed, if anything, and just really easing everybody's mind as far as how this is all going to work, how we're going to keep you safe, how we're going to disinfect, how are the agents coping with the showings. So I think a lot of questions have to be answered because of the COVID and the different guidelines. However, we're getting it done. We're getting it done safely, and we're getting it done quickly.
That's good. This one is from Lou. Lou says, what is the market trend for Schenectady, specifically multifamily houses in the Schenectady High School area?
Well, I think generally, and you know, Multifamily homes, there's a lot of investors out there. There's a lot of also home buyers who are looking to purchase multifamily homes because they can, you know, live in one unit and have use the other unit to pay the mortgage. I know Renata has had multiple listings that have attracted a lot of attention in the capital region. But my sense is whether it's Schenectady, Albany, Troy, Saratoga, multifamily or single family, there's more buyers than there are sellers, which means it's often a competitive bidding process if the home is priced right.
Renata.
Agree. So the investment properties, I think the big one is, you know, is it occupied? What do the leases look like? And how is everything going to transfer to the new owner? You know, investors, again, it's, you know, are you getting the best price right now for that investment property? Probably not. Mm-hmm. However, you know, if you are mortgaging, if you are financing, it's still an excellent investment based on how low the interest rates are right now. And because of the competitive bids, you know, it's no longer an investor's game, I guess you would say. It's, yeah. Everybody's coming in with their best and highest, and it's competitive with somebody that wants to purchase a two-family home to be owner-occupied, as well as somebody that wants to do an investment property based on, you know, rent income and, you know, what that looks like altogether as a whole.
All right, we have two more emails here, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Here's one. This is probably 30 minutes to answer this, but I hope you can do it fairly quickly. This is a good question from Adam in Pittsfield. And Adam writes, have you seen evidence of a reversal of the trend of urbanization lately, given the effects of the pandemic on densely populated cities?
So, I mean, that's a tough question to answer because it really depends on, you know, what city. I think that we're seeing a little bit of a trend with, you know, a lot more leads coming in from the city, whether it's Boston or New York City or a more densely populated area, thinking about making a move. I don't think it's a huge trend. We're definitely watching that trend to see how it's going to come into play in the future. I haven't seen a really big difference at this point, other than maybe more inquiries in what that looks like and a possibility of that happening in the near future or next year.
Alex.
Yeah, I'm not seeing, just to Renata's point, we're seeing, because we don't have very dense populated cities here in the capital region, we're actually seeing more people leaving, you know, the bigger cities in New York and Boston and coming to this area.
Yeah.
I think the one area where people might be a little bit more cautious and we're seeing any sort of impact is in condominium buildings with elevators. So that would, I think, be the one area where people are a little bit more hesitant. But other than that, okay. I think we're seeing pretty strong demand.
All right, about a minute here before the break, and we'll try to tackle this one in that time. This is from Bill in Remsen. We're thinking about selling our home. I'd like to replace the siding and any insulation as needed on our house. It would just be vinyl siding, nothing real expensive. Is this worth doing in preparation for a possible sale? It could be a couple of years, so we would benefit from better insulation until or if we sell. My wife disagrees. We have no other expenses, fixes, upgrades left to do. Do you think it's a good idea? The house will sell for $120,000 to $150,000 in our area, and that is from Bill in Remsen. Got about 30 seconds here. Renata, you go first.
I guess it depends what condition the current siding is in, if it's in poor condition or if it's something that you think is going to affect the value of the property. I would say yes. And overall, what I've seen over the last 3 to 4 years, the biggest shift is buyers are making a decision based on the condition of the house more so now than they ever have. Mm-hmm. So that question or that answer, well, let the buyers take care of it and paint it their own color or do what they want to do. Let's have a conversation about that, because buyers really are looking for a move-in ready home and they're willing to pay a little bit more. And in this seller's market right now, is that there's a good chance it's going to go into multiple situation, hopefully, or multiple interests. And in order to get to that point, the house really should be as best show ready as it can be.
All right, Alex, 30 seconds here, and then we'll take a break.
I agree, but I would limit your investment to, say, 2 to 3% of the the sale price of the home. You don't want to spend too much if you're looking to sell in the near future.
All right, let's take a break. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we will get to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate Today with Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello. We'll be right back. Seven Brothers, a little bumper music for you on a Vox Pop Real Estate program. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551 is the number. We have Alex Monticello here, and we have Renata Lewis here to answer your calls. And John is in Greenfield, Massachusetts. John, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good, awesome.
So, sorry, I'm a little warbly. We have this old farmhouse out in the country. It's pretty cute, but it's really rough. And, I want to sell it, but I did put it on the market, but didn't really have any takers. And I thought, oh, the market's really good. Why didn't it sell? What kind of advice do you have? What should I do?
No one showed it. You never got any feedback on price or condition or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a condition. I think that, there's just it needs a lot of updating. And there's a lot of issues like FHA stuff. I don't think it's approved for FHA. And, it has a wood stove and some electric heat. So it's kind of rough, but I thought, right. Oh, well, people are just going to see the diamond in the rough here.
Yeah. Again, I think it's important to know what your buyer looks like. So if it doesn't qualify for the FHA or a VA or USDA loan, which is like a rural loan, then you're really looking for somebody that's doing a conventional loan or somebody that may come in with cash. So, proper marketing to the right buyer is really important, really discussing of who it's going to be. And at the same time, I can't stress this enough, there's a magic number where you're going to get enough interest as far as price. So maybe adjusting the price and working on the price a little bit just so you get enough exposure, and then getting that right buyer through the front door will happen quickly.
Okay. So do you think I should put the money into it to make it FHA approved? Would it be worth that?
I think that would be a question for maybe a local agent just to see what they would recommend. If your buyer is going to be somebody that if 90% of the buyers are mortgaging in the area, and that's something that will be a factor in producing the buyer, then it might be necessary to just upkeep it or, bring it up to that level. It's really hard to answer without knowing, what the market conditions look like and, what that buyer is going to be.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think price is a big discussion. And, listen, it is a seller's market. So if it's priced well or very competitively, even a little below market, it will help entice others to look at it and let them inflate that price for you if they feel it's worth more than what it's marketed at. If you're priced too high, you're limiting who's actually looking at it.
Alex, you want to jump in real quick?
I don't have too much else to add. I think Renata hit all the high points.
Okay. John, thank you very much for the call. Now let's go to Delmar and Miller. You're on.
Hey, how we doing, guys?
Good.
I'm actually about to put an offer in on a for sale by owner today. And I was wondering if there's any advantage to offering him a separate amount for the contents, the washer, the dryer, the appliances, to take that off the sale price of the house itself.
Well, I think the first question I would have is, are they for sale? And usually that would be a separate transaction or contract. So the house, the price that they're asking for the house is usually not including the contents. So I think first question is to figure out whether they're moving and they're planning on taking those contents with them, or to your point, maybe they want to leave them behind and there's some value to them selling them directly to you.
Yes. Is there any advantage to doing that than putting it all into the mortgage or?
Ah.
Well, the bank won't allow you to, the bank will not allow you to mortgage money to purchase the contents of the home. So are you getting a mortgage?
We are, but if we were to say offer them $5,000 for the contents and they took $5,000 off the selling price, is there any advantage to that?
Well, you got to be careful. What you should do is the contract that you draw up, that you submit to the bank, cannot include any sort of contents other than the normal appliances. If you start adding, say, furniture and other contents to that contract, the bank won't likely appraise the house for the full value. So my suggestion would be, think about what the house is worth to you, negotiate that offer, and then handle the contents in a separate contract outside of the mortgage.
Renata, you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sticky point because, what you're saying is you can, but really nobody could know about it because the bank doesn't want to know about any chattel being included in the mortgage amount. And if they do know it, they're going to want to know what the worth is. So they're going to want to send an appraiser to appraise the furniture. So it's a really sticky point as far as typically if we are including any additional furniture or anything that's going to be left in the house, it's usually a separate addendum that the bank doesn't see, and it's just between the seller and the buyer. And if the money is being transferred for those items separately, the attorneys don't even want to see that as well.
All right. Well, good luck with the sale. Thank you very much for the call. It is Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello is here. And Mary Lou is in Red Hook. Hello, Mary Lou.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm wondering about there is always more money that you have to put down when you look at a piece of property that is a vacation home or you make money on it. Now, the interest rates are so low. Is there any chance that they would bring the interest rates for those properties down?
So are you asking if it's like a vacation property or a second home that you're purchasing?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yep.
And
right.
they're always higher rates.
Right. So basically you get the best rate for a primary residence. So when it's a home that you're going to be residing in 60% of the year, they're going to call it your primary residence. Buying a second home is either an investment property or a property that you will not be residing. And in that case, those interest rates are higher. There are some banks that if you can prove that you're going to be residing in the homes, similar times, say 50% on both ends, they might be able to work on that interest rate for you. But it's really not the norm.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. And I just thought that since they have done such a great job on lowering the interest rates for the primary resident, they would think about doing it for a second family home or whatever. But they're not, are they?
Yeah, the interest rate should be very similar, maybe a little bit higher. It's just the initial money that you need to put down on the loan is going to be significantly higher. So they want to see about 25% down on a vacation property. But your interest rate is still going to be low.
Well, what do you mean by low? If you're looking at 2.5 for primary, they're not going to give you anything less than 4.7. right?
Right. Alex, have you done a vacation or a second home? I haven't done one recently, so I don't know what those rates look like, but they've got to be better than
usually
what they would normally be.
Yeah, so normally they're about a point higher in my experience. So if the bank is offering a 30-year fixed on a primary residence, you know, at 2.9, then the second home or investment mortgage should be around 3.9.
Really?
So, yeah. So you might want to shop around to a couple different banks. And if you are working with a real estate agent, they might have contacts and know the local lenders in the area.
But
it's worth asking around. But I would say about a point difference in it, and it would come down as the other interest rate comes down. It would also mirror that.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, Mary Lou,
You're welcome. Thank you
for the call. Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello is here. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about real estate today, Renata, you said the bank will sometimes be willing to play ball on the interest rate if you're close to 50% of the time in, say, a vacation home. That tells me this is not a regulation. This is just what they want to do. Is that correct?
Good question. I don't know if it's a regulation. Basically, it's, you know, they're going to give you the best interest rate for a home that you own. That's your best tax benefits and any incentives and anything like that, because home ownership, they want to make sure that, you know, the mass is made available for them to be a homeowner, and we're going to give you all these best incentives and interest rates. When it comes to the investment properties and a vacation home, those guidelines become a little bit more strict.
Mm-hmm.
And the bank assumes a little bit more risk on those, just because if you're not living there for 50% of the time, it's, you know, what's going on with this property? Is it being rented? So they just assume a little bit more risk on that side. That's why the guidelines are a little bit more strict. So I guess it would be a guideline, but I don't know too much about that.
Now, why would they consider it to be more risky if you rent it out?
Well, because now you have tenants that are going in there, they could possibly destroy the property. You know, if it's not rented, is it vacant? Is anybody watching it? If there is a water main break, is somebody going to know about it?
Yeah.
So it's just different issues that come in if you're not living there. And because you are the primary owner on that loan and you are the lien on that, you are responsible for whatever happens to that property. And if you're not always there, then they assume that the risk is a little bit higher based on nobody taking care of the property as they should.
Alex.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the one thing that I like to keep in mind is when you're working with a bank, you want to ask them, are they issuing a conventional mortgage or is it a portfolio mortgage? And the portfolio mortgage or portfolio lenders are banks that basically they'll hold all of the mortgage in-house and they won't resell it. So they do have more flexibility if they like you as a borrower or they, you know, feel that you're going to be spending more time potentially in the second home. They do have a little bit more flexibility to adjust their criteria. But most of the banks have certain guidelines that they have to follow because they're basically reselling the mortgages, and the people who are buying them have specific guidelines. But the question to ask is, are you a portfolio lender or do you have any portfolio mortgage products that you offer?
Very interesting indeed. So when you take that mortgage out, you can expect that it'll be sold fairly quickly.
Depends on the bank. Ray, do you want me to name banks or?
I don't know. Do you want to get sued?
I'm an attorney. Come and get me.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Well, listen, it's only our station license, so go ahead.
Right. No, in all seriousness, though, it depends on the bank. If they're a portfolio lender or it's a portfolio product, they're not going to resell it. But I would say 90% of the mortgages that we interact with are conventional mortgages that get resold.
Hmm.
And so odds are it's going to get resold. You can always ask the loan officer when you're applying for the mortgage, do you anticipate this getting resold or are you going to hold it on the bank's books in-house?
Does it really matter from a buyer standpoint whether the mortgage gets resold? Those terms stay the same regardless of who owns it, right? When you
sign
it.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
I guess it would depend if, you know, say you're buying this property and you're not going, you want to pay it off in a year. You kind of want to know what they're doing and who they're selling it to, what those terms look like. Just like, what is your future plan with that property and what is your intention with it?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes if you don't know exactly what's happening to that loan and you have a plan, it may backfire if the loan doesn't allow some of those things to happen.
Aha. All right. This email came in, and maybe it's connected to this. I don't know, but we'll do this email and then we'll take a break and then go back to the phones. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Renata Lewis is here and Alex Monticello to answer your real estate questions. This one came in from Cynthia a while back, and she said, well, I won't say the name of the company, but she writes, we just got a call from an investors group asking if we wanted to sell our cabana here in Western Massachusetts. What's that about? And that's from Cynthia.
I don't know. I had a client who's selling his home just reach out to me and said he got a text message, and he's getting multiple text messages from people saying they have cash, they're ready to buy your home. In my experience, a lot of these companies that are proactively reaching out and saying that they, you know, have cash to buy your home, they're often lowballing, and they're looking for people in distressed situations or people who may not know the true value of their home, who might get excited with a cash offer to pick up a home at a bargain basement price. So usually when people are getting these solicitations, I would recommend get a second or third opinion and maybe call a couple different realtors to assess the value of your home and see if it lines up with the offer.
But Renata, in your experience, is it common for someone whose house is not on the market? Now, Cynthia, I assume her cabana is not on the market in Western Massachusetts. Got a call out of the blue from an investors group that I looked up. They appear legitimate, and they want to buy it. Is a cold call like this common?
It is. It is. We do it as realtors. Like right now, we can't just because of the pandemic and the different guidelines that we're under. However, you know, if you come to me, Ray, and say, hey, Ray, I really want to live in this. Hey, Renata, I really want to live in this area. And this is where my wife wants to be, my kids and whatever. And if nothing's on the market, sure, I'll make some phone calls. Hey, I have a buyer that's very interested in this neighborhood. Are you thinking about selling?
Hmm.
And again, like Alex said, a lot of these investors are very proactive and they are enticing because, you know, they'll remove all the contingencies, no inspections, no mortgage, no negotiations, no realtor fees. They'll throw everything at you, but be careful because their bottom line is considerably lower than what you could potentially get for your house.
Okay.
And, you know, some people bite, some people want to do it. And again, just do your due diligence, find out exactly what your true value of your home is. And then at least, if anything, you can negotiate with these people if you think that you can make that deal happen.
All right, let's take a quick break. Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello, it's Real Estate Today on the program. 800-348-2551 is our number. And to the phones we will go after this. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Alex Monticello is here. Renata Lewis is here. It's Real Estate Today on the program. And Susanna in Rensselaer. Susanna, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
It's Susanna.
Hi, Susanna.
Hi. I have a little house in Rensselaer, and it's I don't even know what it's worth. I'd say around $100,000. I want to put it on the market, and everything is fine in it, nice and pretty, except it has a bad roof. It doesn't leak, but it's 20 years old, and it looks 20 years old. Is it worth my doing that before I put it on the market, or do I put it on the market and knock off $5,000?
Hmm. Well, then there was silence.
Okay, well, it's hard because we're not together, so we usually look at
each other. Yeah, I know. It's tough to get the
point.
Cue. All right, Renata, you go first.
Renata's kicking me under the table.
Yeah,
right.
Under the desk. I just text him. I'm like, I can usually kick you and say it's your turn, or I don't know how to answer this one well.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Whatever.
All right, go ahead. Renata, you go first.
What would you do?
So listen, the roofs are the biggest gray area when we're negotiating. So if you choose not to replace the roof, you will, you know, just fully disclose it. The roof is older. I would maybe have somebody take a peek at it, maybe get an estimate of what a new roof estimate would look like, and just make sure that there's no structural issue
that.
With it. Okay, good.
I did that. It's $6,000 for a new roof.
Yep. Okay. So, and it's not leaking in any place. There's no structural damage to any of the rafters or anything like that.
Nope.
Okay. So as long as it passes inspection, and in order for it to pass inspection, it has to have, for a normal conventional loan. So here comes the banks again. For a normal conventional loan, it has to pass inspection, which means it can't have any leaks in the roof, and it has to be structurally sound, and it's just going to be sold as is, as an old roof, right? However, an FHA mm-hmm. loan, we'll want to know that there's at least 3 years life expectancy left on that roof, meaning when a new okay. owner takes ownership, they need to make sure that that roof has at least 3 years left, because they don't want that new right. owner to have to spend the extra money right away, because they may not be able to do it. So it could be a bargaining tool, as far as if you don't fix it, you are going to be eliminating the FHA and the VA buyers. And that, because mm-hmm. of the price point, those are going to be your biggest buyer pool. So that could be tricky based on who's going to come in and buy it, and they may not be able to qualify for the loan. So even offering that okay. credit may not give them the ability to get mortgaged or financed on that property.
Okay,
Alex,
so,
anything else to add?
Is it a asphalt shingle roof?
We lost her.
Oh.
Let's assume it is.
Well, my next question is, if it was 20 years old, it might, you know, it might have an extra 5 years of life, to yeah. Renata's point. And if it does have, you know, at least 3 years of life left in it, it's not leaking, it's just 20 years old, I would be inclined to say, list it as is and see if it comes up. And then if it does, you've got the estimate to negotiate.
Fair enough. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis to answer your real estate questions here for about the next 13 or 14 minutes. Lisa in New Paltz. Lisa.
Yes, hello. I have a question about downsizing, moving, you know, in our 60s and want to sell the primary first home that we've owned many years. But how do you creatively finance the next project? Because we don't really want to sell until we have something that we've got settled, a new place. And I'm just wondering how people finance things like that in their 60s, because I'm not sure how much banks want to lend to people in their 60s, if that's an issue.
That's
so anyway,
a great question.
Anything creative? Okay.
So I have a couple ideas. You can, if you have equity in your home, you could take mm-hmm. out a home equity line of credit on your current home. The other option would be, if you have any retirement accounts, you could potentially borrow money from your retirement accounts. But are you getting any sort of regular income through retirement, pension, or Social Security?
Yes, that would be happening, not necessarily pension, but Social Security, and we're certainly not ready to retire yet, so we will still be on the books, per se.
Oh, you still currently have income?
Oh, yes, yeah, we're still working.
Oh, okay, so the good news is the bank is not going to say, because you're 60 years old, we're not going to give you a mortgage. They're going
to
look at your financial
situation
today. So if you're mm-hmm. working and you have income, they're going to look at your current income and your current debt, and then they'll base your mortgage on that. They can't discriminate against you just because you're 60 years old.
Oh, interesting. I always thought that, well, if you're in your 60s, it might be difficult to have to get a mortgage. Very
no.
good.
Not at all.
No, thank you.
Not at all.
And about retirement accounts, borrowing from them, if they're traditional accounts, is that any issue? I mean, I don't know any of the rules or regulations for that type of borrowing. Who would have that information?
Whoever administers your retirement accounts. But for example, if it's a 401k or a deferred compensation account, I believe you can borrow up to $50,000 mm-hmm. For the for the purposes of purchasing a new home. But whoever administers your account, if it's through a big brokerage or a financial services company, you could be able to reach out to them and they can tell you the specifics.
All right, Lisa, thank you very much for the call. Renata, did you want to add anything?
No, that was pretty much, you know, what I would, you know, include as well. It's, you know, I would just start with, because they are working, I would just start with a regular lender and just say, hey, this is our current financial situation. What are we approved for? And then if it's not enough, then maybe add into the equity, you know, tap into the equity or any retirement funds if needed.
Okay, let's go to Jim in Schenectady. Jim, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the real estate compensation for the agent versus the selling quickly. We had our house listed last year, and we interviewed three agents, and one said that they wanted it would sell for $325. One said $340. One said $350. We insisted on listing it at $370. It sold in 1 week with multiple offers. What is the incentive? Now, let's assume there was a $20,000 difference. We were paying a 5% on our contract, which means it was $1,000 in the pot for the agents, plural. They split that between the selling agent, the listing agent, and the two brokers agents. That means their take on that was $250. That's very little incentive for them to get us the additional $20,000. I was wondering if you would like to comment on that compensation structure. Thank you.
Oh, this is a good one. All right, who wants this one?
So by law, we really can't discuss commissions and the fees because every brokerage has various commission splits.
Right.
You know, but as far as, you know, it really is not an incentive for us. We sign a fiduciary duty as a realtor. So whoever we're working with, whether it's the seller or the buyer, for instance, the seller, our job is to obviously do our due diligence and price the home accurately, make sure that we are within market value or better, make sure that we market to aggressively expose it to as many buyers as we can. And ultimately, if it's exposed properly and you get really great exposure as far as a lot of showings and maybe multiple offers, then you know that the agent did their job and exposed and was able to market it to a mass to get you a higher price point. So you're right.
If I may stop you there for a second. The agent who listed our house wanted to list it at $350.
Right.
She said that's the maximum it would take.
And you said $370.
We sold it for $370.
Right. Gotcha.
Within a week with multiple offers. So my point is, you as agents, your primary focus is to get the listing because you're guaranteed compensation.
Ah.
And then sell it.
All right, Alex.
If you don't get the listing, go ahead. Sorry.
Alex, you're an attorney. Why don't you take it from here?
No, I mean, I think, Jim, I think you raised some good points. The idea is, agents have an incentive to underprice the home, or they're less concerned about pricing the home because the percentage, a $10,000 difference in price amounts to a small amount of money in their pocket. Is that what your point is, Jim?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately the question comes down to, if you don't trust the realtor or you don't believe they have their best interest at heart, then you probably shouldn't hire them.
Yeah.
Right. I think ultimately I do understand when I represent a seller that this is one of their most important investments and assets. And my goal is to try to maximize the price and achieve whatever other goal they want. If that's a fast sale, we'll talk about pricing it based on that.
Yeah.
But if you don't trust that person or you don't feel they have their best interests at heart, then they're probably not the right person to hire. So that would be my advice.
Well, Jim, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike in Norfolk, Connecticut. Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have a multi-tiered question. First question is,
sort of a big picture one. There's been a, I'm from this little town, northwestern Connecticut, but I've been living in Brooklyn, New York, and I've read and seen that there's this overall trend of people leaving the city to live outside of the city and establish a new life due to the pandemic. I'm wondering if you think that trend is going to continue. And secondly, I've seen the price of houses really tick up, and I'm wondering if that trend is going to continue as well.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Well, it's if we all had a magic crystal ball that we could predict something that's specific, it would be awesome. So the answer is we're definitely watching the trends. We're watching the economic climate. We're watching the unemployment climate. We're watching to see what's happening with the interest rates. So there's a lot of factors that are involved. It's really tough to predict what's going to happen in the future. So, I mean, if you're thinking about selling, if you're thinking about making a move, we know what the market's doing right now. And if you're ready to do it now. Jump in and maximize the value of your home and maximize on the dollar and make that move now. Because next year it could be the same. It could change. We have an election year also that we're watching closely to see what happens as a result. There's going to be changes. So there is really a lot of factors that are that we add into the whole equation. And it's a really tough question to answer because who predicted the pandemic, right? And
right.
Look where we're at and look at what we need to change and conform to in order to make business happen. So I really don't have an answer for you other than keep in touch maybe with a local realtor in your area. See what they're predicting, see what they're watching, and if they see something or know of something happening, they could help you make a decision when it's necessary.
Alex.
Yeah, I think we are going to continue to see people leaving larger metropolitan areas for more space. We've seen a lot of it in the last few months, and I think that trend will continue as long as, you know, this pandemic continues to linger, and it probably is going to be around for at least through 2021. I think with respect to prices, I think if we, as long as the economy remains where it's at and interest rates remain low, I think prices will continue to stay where they are or rise. I think the one thing that could knock prices off is if we hit a deeper recession, if this recovery maybe slips and we fall back into another recession.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Quickly over to Mary in Maybrook. Mary, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, if you're a first-time buyer, what is the percentage they have to put down, and is it wise to do it to, as a first-time buyer or to have like a family member that's more that's older to give, I guess, a larger down payment? I don't know which way to go.
So with respect to down payment requirements, for the most part, it's not dependent upon whether you're a first-time home buyer or second-time home buyer. It's usually dependent upon your credit score and the mortgage product that you're using. If you're a veteran, there's a VA loan option, which you can do zero down. If you're buying in more rural areas, there's a USDA option, which you can do zero down. If you don't have a lot of money down, there's a good product through FHA, which is 3.5% down. The only added advantage of having an older person on the loan is that can help with upping the credit score potentially or increasing the income of the borrower. But you normally, if those aren't issues, then adding another person to the mortgage won't necessarily make a difference.
I think
right,
the one thing
other,
I would
can I just ask? Go ahead.
Renata, go ahead.
So the one thing I would add to that is if adding someone to the mortgage helps with the borrower income, and if that person is willing to maybe help them come in with more money down, someone that's putting 20% down on a mortgage will eliminate the PMI, which is the mortgage insurance. So that will significantly bring down the mortgage payment a year. And if you do an FHA loan, that PMI will stay for the life of the loan. So there's a good chance that at some point they would want to refinance. So depending, I think the liquid money is a big factor too. How much money can they put down and can they eliminate the PMI?
All right, one other question about that. What about, like, as a senior citizen, can I say I bought the house and I put it in, I get a star. Is that a better thing to do?
Is that even legal?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, if you do that, you need to be the primary resident in that address, so you cannot claim the residency that you're living in now, because you can't apply for star in two places.
Oh, I don't own a place. That's why I was looking.
Oh, okay.
I could own.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was looking. Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mary, thanks a lot very much. Okay, I guess we're about out of time here. There was an email. We only have 15 seconds. A person bought a house in 2016 with a 25-year-old roof. Home inspector didn't raise any flags. The bank also offered the loan without any issues. Why didn't my realtor flag this, or shouldn't I expect this from a realtor?
Well, as a realtor, we always want to, you know, we look at the property condition disclosure. We do visually look at the roof, and if we feel the roof is older, I usually have that conversation. Let's find out how old the roof is. Again, a roof can pass an inspection and it can pass a lender. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's bad. As long as it's not leaking, as long as it's not structural defects in the roof or the rafters or anything else in the roof, then it will pass. And it's just just knowing the full disclosure that it's older.
Well, we are out of time, but thank you both for being here, Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis. Thank you both. Stay well. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Be healthy. Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing custom exhibit design and fabrication, including protective shielding, acrylic dividers, and portable barriers for office and retail environments. Your partner for a custom experience, EmpireExhibits.com. Berkshire Money Management, providing full-service financial, estate, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. BerkshireMM.com for more. And Catterskill Herb Exchange, an online herb shop specializing in organically grown medicinal herbs, herbal remedies, and products sourced from the Hudson Valley and Catskill regions. CatterskillHerbExchange.com. Once again, thanks to Alex and Renata for joining us. Thank you for listening. Great real estate calls today. Very much appreciated. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Amber Sickles took the calls. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we go from farm to table and back again. Tomorrow at 2. Right now, it's the Capital Connection.